This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, May 11th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Yesterday, we told you about a ransomware attack that forced the shutdown of the biggest fuel pipeline on the East Coast. Now, the FBI is pointing the finger at a relatively new criminal gang believed to be operating out of Eastern Europe as the culprit. Our cybersecurity reporter, David Uberti, will bring us the latest on the attack and what it could mean for how we protect the nation's energy infrastructure. That's after these headlines. Pentagon officials are considering ending the JEDI cloud computing project. The 10-year, $10 billion contract was awarded to Microsoft in 2019. But since then, it's been mired in litigation from Amazon, which argues that it was unfairly passed over. Some lawmakers have also said the contract's single-vendor approach is outdated. They say the Pentagon should move to an increasingly popular approach that would include multiple companies as participants. In the wake of those various challenges, the Deputy Defense Secretary said the department would be reviewing the project to determine the best path forward. Attorneys general from 44 states and territories are urging Facebook to abandon its plan to launch a version of Instagram for children. In a letter to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, the officials said research has painted a grim picture of kids' social media use, and they referenced links to mental health problems and bullying. A spokesman for Facebook said the company will work with regulators and lawmakers as its plans for the product evolve. And the small German company BioNTech got a lot of international attention after it partnered with Pfizer to come up with the West's first COVID-19 vaccine last year. Now, venture capitalists are searching for the next hidden gem in Germany's biotechnology sector. Last year, German biotech firms raised a record $3.7 billion, more than triple the amount from the year before. And our reporter Ruth Bender says some in the industry are hoping it could revitalize Germany's medical innovation scene. Here's Ruth.
Germany has played a really big role in medical invention in the 19th and even the 20th century. You know, it's known, for instance, Bayer, a big German pharma company, invented aspirin. Their scientists and other researchers invented x-rays. They had very big corporations up until sort of the late 1970s. And then a lot, you know, started relocating and outsourcing for cost reasons. Some were sold or broken up, and the sector now, you know, lags behind the US in terms of size and where it's competing globally. So a lot of people are hoping that with this massive success now of BioNTech and potentially CureVac, when they do get the validation and the regulatory approval, that could be the start of, you know, growing the pharma sector again in Germany and again playing a leading role on the global market for drug inventions.
All right, coming up after the break, a cyber attack disrupted a major fuel pipeline for the U.S. We've got the latest next.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Over the weekend, we learned of a ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline, the operator of the main fuel pipeline on the east coast of the U.S. Yesterday, the Federal Bureau of Investigation said it suspects a group called DarkSide, believed to be operating in Eastern Europe, was behind the attack. For the latest on all this, as well as the impact, I'm joined now by our cybersecurity reporter, David Uberti. Hey, Dave, thanks for joining.
Hey, Amanda.
Okay, so bring us up to speed on this attack. What do we know about how it unfolded?
So Colonial Pipeline issued a statement Friday saying that they proactively took down some of their systems in response to a ransomware attack. They did this, you know, presumably in the hope that it wouldn't spread to other parts of their computer networks. But the details of why exactly they did that, what data might have been affected, whether these attackers potentially jumped to different companies that are either tied in as suppliers or customers to the pipeline, all of that is still unclear and unfolding. Colonial issued a new statement early Monday saying that they're taking a sort of step-by-step approach in the hope of, you know, bringing some of their pipeline online later in the week. But I think a lot of details about what exactly happened, including, you know, the specifics of what motivated the attackers behind it, are still going to come out in the coming days and weeks and months.
And so the FBI is pointing the finger at this group DarkSide, which is, as we said, believed to be operating out of Eastern Europe. What else do we know about this group?
In many cases, some of these sophisticated hacking gangs operate out of countries where they're basically not prosecuted for hacking into U.S.-based companies. So that's oftentimes in places like North Korea, Iran, or post-Soviet states. So DarkSide is believed to be this ransomware group, which targets, in often cases, U.S. companies in the hope of extracting, you know, some sort of financial payout.
Right. And they said as much in a statement posted to their website on Monday. DarkSide said that its only goal was to make money and that it wasn't tied to a, quote, defined government. And, you know, Dave, with this particular attack, it might be a silly question, but I have to ask it. How can a cyber attack impact a fuel pipeline? Where are the systems even to hack?
So there's a few different areas where this could really make a big dent. You know, one is information technology. So this is like the computers that you or I use when we go to work, you know, whether we're on Slack or, you know, exchanging emails and whatnot. And there's also with industrial companies, what they call operational technology. So this is tech that companies such as a pipeline operator might use to monitor or switch the flow of gasoline to gauge what types of gasoline are going where to different types of customers, to share that data with regulatory bodies such as the EPA. It really runs the gamut. It could also include, you know, billing systems, which could help them decide what types of gasoline to send certain customers and how to get money from those customers and whatnot. So OT really covers a lot of different territory within an industrial company such as this. And cybersecurity experts tend to say that if an attacker is able to strike OT systems as opposed to IT systems, it could be a much bigger problem for them because it's at the heart of their business.
Got it. So information systems and operation systems. So as you mentioned, Colonial Pipeline said it's working to restore service by the end of the week. And obviously the kind of recovery here is still ongoing. But can you just talk us through what the impact of this attack could be in the short term as well as the long term?
I mean, the short term impact, you know, surely is the fact that, you know, gas prices are rising and there's a lot of questions about how the government will respond in the sort of immediate sense, whether they will take some sorts of action against those folks who are thought to be involved. I mean, long term, there is this bigger policy debate about the government's role in terms of protecting the nation's infrastructure, 85% of which is held by private companies. So while there is, you know, a sort of discussion about how to protect electrical utilities in particular, so the types of companies that may supply the energy to your home, pipelines in particular are very unregulated by comparison. So I think there will be a lot of questions asked in the coming days and weeks about whether pipelines need some of that oversight the same way that electric utilities have when it comes to cybersecurity. And oftentimes that focuses in on really simple cyber hygiene practices in terms of, you know, backing up your data or making sure you patch your software and whatnot. So I think there will be this longer term policy debate, just particularly given that the discussion around cybersecurity has been such at such a heightened state in recent months after this SolarWinds attack and some of these other large cyber attacks that we've experienced.
And as you've sort of alluded to, this attack seems to lay bare some vulnerabilities in the energy sector in particular. You know, you mentioned that a lot of these companies are private, and that obviously limits what the government can do to regulate their cyber response. Is that the main reason that they're so susceptible?
I mean, in many cases, these companies have really aging infrastructure. For decades, a lot of these systems that they use to either pump gas or distribute energy or monitor all of these processes was just totally analog. So the industry has undergone a rapid digitization over the last several years and beyond. And so that always corresponds with an uptick in cyber threats. So the real question is to what extent some of these companies are actually investing in cybersecurity as they digitize a lot of their processes. So I think you will have, you know, folks in the private sector who are saying, we actually do need to step up our investment to deal with this sort of stuff. But you may also have regulators or U.S. officials who call on companies or potentially force companies to make some of these investments.
Yeah, and I want to talk in a little bit more detail about some of the measures that U.S. officials have been batting around. What are authorities doing to keep kind of critical energy infrastructure secure? And could this incident kind of change the way that they go about that?
Well, the U.S. government does have a regulatory body that conducts audits of utility companies, particularly electric utility companies. They do those periodically, and they can impose fines if a company isn't updating its software periodically, or if a company isn't, you know, practicing some of that cyber hygiene that I mentioned. Within the pipeline sector, specifically in oil and gas, there is no such regulatory body that oversees that. So I think while there has been a lot of discussion from the Biden administration and the Trump administration before it about how to improve, you know, the supply chains of the electric system and also to improve the cybersecurity of the electric utilities in this country, there's been less discussion about pipelines in particular. So I think this might, you know, drive some additional, you know, parts of that discussion with regard to that specific area, which has been pretty much untouched to this point.
Got it. Okay, so finally, just broadening out here, this was a ransomware attack, and you and I and some of our colleagues have been talking on the show a lot about how common this kind of attack has become over the course of the pandemic. How does this incident with Colonial Pipeline kind of change our understanding about the prevalence of these attacks and how they're being carried out?
Well, I think in a lot of cases, this is a very typical ransomware attack. On the other hand, it's affected, you know, one of the largest, you know, pieces of energy distribution in the country. So it's a super big example of this problem. And, you know, over the last year or two, particularly during the pandemic, the amount of ransomware has really exploded. And it could affect small businesses. It could affect huge corporations. So I think, you know, over the last couple of weeks or so, the Biden administration has increasingly labeled this as a national security threat. And I think you will see a lot more direct action from policymakers and U.S. officials to try to get a handle on this issue. You know, that said, you know, as I said at the outset, a lot of these folks who launch these sorts of attacks operate in countries where the U.S. has no real law enforcement jurisdiction, and local authorities there really don't care if, you know, a criminal gang, you know, breaks into a U.S. company. So it's a really difficult issue in that sense. Secondarily, I will say there's this another interesting discussion about whether companies should pay out ransomware demands. And that's difficult in the sense that, while obviously you don't want to create a market for, you know, criminal activity, on the other hand, it may be cheaper to do that if you're a company than it is to have your systems locked up for, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month, or whatnot. So there is a lot of nuance to this issue, and I think no one's really clear on what precise angle to take on it.
All right. So it sounds like a lot to talk with you about in the future, I'm sure. Our cybersecurity reporter, David Uberti. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Amanda.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.